Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Are you ready? Let's get ready to ramp up your sails. And now the man you've been waiting for, he is the real thriller in Manila. The undisputed, undefeated, reigning, defending, pound for pound, heavyweight, John, the sales machine, Rankin!
Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is a sales growth company CEO, president, and chief antagonist. His passion for problem solving reaches well beyond the sales and business world. He is celebrated author of Not Taught, What It Takes to Be Successful in the 21st Century That Nobody's Teaching You, and Gap Selling, Getting the Customer to Yes, How Problem-Centric Selling Increases Sales by Changing Everything You Know About Relationships, Overcoming Objections, Closing, and Price. Gap Selling has been voted among the sales community as one of the best sales books of all time. Please welcome Keenan.
What's up, peeps? Thanks for having me, bro.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure and it's an honor. So tell me, how'd you cut your teeth in sales?
You know, I get this question a lot. And I think like most people, we're all born with some set of skill sets or talents or whatever, and they lend themselves to different things, right? I just happened to be born with the ability to influence and read and understand people, and with when I want something, hustle. So I cut my teeth on sales as a kid, whether it was, you know, convincing the other kids to pool their money and start a lemonade stand, or whether it was selling raffle tickets for my local school fundraiser and selling more than anybody else, or, you know, whatever it is. It's my whole life was trying to convince people to do what I wanted them to do. Similar to, if you're familiar with Tom Sawyer, you know this book Tom Sawyer starts?
That's right.
Do you know how the book starts?
I don't recall, but I know he influenced Huck Finn to go fishing and to paint a fence.
Okay, so in the very beginning of the book, when you read Tom Sawyer, it opens with him painting a fence. He's got to paint a fence for his aunt or something. And his friends come up and like, let's go to the river or something. We're going to fish. Let's do this. He's like, no, I'm going to stay here and paint the fence. Like, oh, that sucks. You got to sit and paint the fence. No, I'm having a blast. I want to paint the fence. And then before he knows it, all of his friends didn't go fishing and they're painting the fence and he's sitting on the side watching.
Yeah. And he's right?
So I was sort of that guy. I was that guy.
Right on. I love it. See, I used to tell that story to my sales teams about how to recruit, train, and retain and build a sales team, especially with how Tom Sawyer so eloquently did it with enrolling others to want to paint the fence. And he got to go fishing with Huckleberry Finn. That's a great story.
So that's really, that's how I cut my teeth. I was selling, because selling to me is influencing. Selling is not selling, it's influencing. So I learned to influence people very early in life.
How did you discover, you know, the gap in selling in the industry allow you to evolve the book? Because it's got a lot of controversial chapters in there.
I'd like to say there was a eureka moment, but there really wasn't. Like, so I started a sales consulting firm in 2011. And I had been blogging for 2 years before that. I kept blogging after that. So I would go out on client sites and I would spend time with them, ripping apart their sales org, sitting in on opportunity deal reviews, sitting on pipeline calls and coaching and what, you know, and watching them sell. And as I would do that, inevitably someone would do something that really pissed me off. So I would say, Jesus, no, you're not getting it. And I would go up and I'd draw something on the board, something that triggered or inspired me right away. Right. I'd say, this is what you need to be doing. And then every once in a while, I'd do that, and I'd sit back down, and I'd look at the book, like, ooh, that was good. So I'd take, like, a picture of it, or I'd jot it down in a notebook, and I'd blog about it later. I'd put it in a file. And over the years, that started growing. And then in one particular instance, I don't bore you too much with it, but I was doing a pipeline review and I kept asking him why the buyer should buy. And at first his answer was, oh, well, they have disparate systems. So I accepted that on the surface. But then we went to the next opportunity. I said, okay, great. Why do these people have to buy? He says, well, they have disparate systems. So after the third time of that, I'm like, what's this different? Fuck, you can't say disparate systems anymore. You can't say that. That doesn't make any fucking sense. They are all not buying for the same reason. And so I was like, so what's going on today that is broken that they have to buy something? That's what I want. And he goes, well, the systems don't work. I'm like, no. And so I got fired up and I went up to the whiteboard and I wrote, listen, right now, anybody who's buying something is unhappy in the current environment. And you got to figure out what that is. And they instead, they want to go somewhere else. They're not happy here and they want to go here. So the size of that space is the gap. And the bigger the gap, the more value. So I sat there and I said, so where are they today and where do they want to go? I don't know. Well, now you got to go find that shit out. So then when I, you know, when I was done with him and I looked at them, I said, ooh, that's good. And so again, I took a snapshot of it and I put it in a little folder. And then I don't know, sometime after that, I had another client that said, look, I need you to create a training for my team. And I said, I don't do training. I only do consulting because you got to come up with something because I need you to help them sell. And I said, but I'm a consultant. And I said, I help the organizational and the structure, strategy, structure, people, process. I don't have a training. And he goes, figure it out. All right, fine. So I started to figure it out. And then I went back to my notes. I went back to my blog. And all of a sudden, as I was building his little training, I was like, bam. So then I wrote the book.
One of the favorite parts, and I want you to elaborate on it because I was laughing when I was reading your book. I have similar experiences. And there's no such thing as closing, right? And there's so many sales trainers out there. I mean, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. There's, mm-hmm. you know, their methodologies potentially work for them, not making anybody right or wrong. It's as long as you're effective and you're efficient. But for me, sales ultimately from the beginning is like Zig Ziglar, is service, solving problems, and making sure they're satisfied for life. And to me, that's just priceless. Now, the methodology you use is also priceless. Why don't you go deeper into the fact that there it really is no closing. There's no such thing.
Yeah, so what I say to that is if you really step back and you look at the concept of closing, okay, if you look back at it and you step out from an operational perspective or an execution perspective, why is someone closing? They're closing because they are done with their pitch, their demo. Whatever it is that salesperson is doing, they're done. Like, they're done. They have nothing, no value to add. So now the rest of their effort is just trying to get you to say, yes, I'll buy. Well, if you get to a place where you have to close the buyer, that means the buyer hasn't gotten there yet. You've gotten too far ahead of the buyer. You're done, but the buyer's not. So what has happened, what we were taught is how to yank the buyer forward. That's what a close is, right? To yank the buyer to where you are to make the decision on your terms, right? So whether it's the assumptive close or whether it's a hard close, you're here, the buyer's here, and you yank them to where you are. Well, that's not selling. That's manipulation. Selling, I argue, is done at the closing is done at the beginning. If I properly diagnose the problems, impacts, and root causes that you or your organization is struggling with today, if I properly diagnose that up front and get you to say, yes, I'm having those problems, these are an issue, this stuff's killing me, I have to change. Notice what I did right there. If I get you to a place where you realize you have to change, then 80% of the sale's already done. You may not buy from me, but you realize that you can't do nothing. So that's the first one. So closing is done on the end by just getting the buyer to acknowledge that the status quo is not acceptable. So then what you do is you show them how your product or service can deliver on that those issues and challenges and move them somewhere else. And if they see that, they'll be like, okay, this is fantastic. Got it. When do we start? How do we start? You don't have to close them. They will close themselves.
Pitching is not selling, right? I love that too. Talk about pitching is not selling.
When you pitch something, the general premise of pitching is you're telling somebody what you're going to do for them. Pitching is telling, right? If you properly, here's another way of looking at it. Think about a doctor. A doctor comes in and they, if they're good, they ask you a bazillion questions. Sometimes the questions don't even make sense. They ask you a bazillion questions, and sometimes the questions are in form of a test, right? Like, so when a doctor does a blood draw, technically speaking, that's a question. You just can't answer it, right? Do you have too many white blood cells? Do you have too much cholesterol? Do you have a high enzyme count? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, he's trying to ask those questions, but he's asking them through the concept of a test. Once she gets that information back as a doctor, she is able to properly assess what she believes is wrong based on the questions you answered for her, based on the test she's run, and maybe based on the imaging she's done. From that, she has a very clear picture, like I just said a minute ago, of what's wrong. So all she doesn't have to pitch anymore. She basically makes a recommendation based on the results of the answers to the questions, the blood and the MRI, or whatever it is. This is what's wrong. This is why it's happening. Here's my recommendation. Does that make sense? Pitching is telling somebody about your product, your service, and what you're going to do for them outside of the context of understanding the problem. So it's basically chucking a bunch of shit against the wall and hoping it sticks. That's not selling. That's bullshit.
Telling is not selling. I say that to my team all the time. Telling is not selling. Like, I love opening with the close. You know, how would you like this, 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 and this? But ultimately, you know, there's different content. You don't open with the close unless you understand the problem and the pain of the individual. And then opening with the close is very effective because that way you can close the gap from where they're at in a state of pain to where they're going. And a lot of salespeople don't do it. And, you know, just like with the doctor's analogy, it's malpractice. you're literally malpracticing in sales. It's sales malpractice. So what do you think is the number one thing that separates great salespeople from average?
An inherent soft skill perspective, I would say there's two things that great salespeople have that average don't. One is an extremely high business acumen or critical thinking skills. I'll let you decide which one. So critical thinking skills slash business acumen. And the other one is an extremely high level of fearless curiosity. So those are the two traits, human traits that great salespeople have. The skills that they have inside of selling is their ability to take those two traits and apply them to the process of diagnosing, problem solving, and solution recommendation. So if you have someone who has a high level of business acumen and amazing critical thinking skills with a massive amount of fearless curiosity to really not accept things on the surface, but constantly want to know why. Their ability to take those and turn those into powerful diagnostic skill sets that allow them to engage with buyers and basically dissect or diagnose an entire environment, and that the business acumen and critical thinking skills to process why that's not correct, what's causing it, what the root causes are, the impacts of that. That's what the greatest salespeople do. Because once they've diagnosed that problem to the most granular element, the buyer's like, this fucking guy's a genius. Let's go. I need you.
The key for me is always, you know, being able to explain the problem back to the individual better than they can. Right. And when you can do that, they resonate with it. And you become relevant in having a conversation of solving a real problem. Otherwise, you know, you're just pitching, right? You got commission breath. You stink.
You become credible.
More of an advisor. So I'm a big fan of Chet Holmes. Chet Holmes passed away. He wrote The Ultimate Sales Machine.
I know his daughter.
There's a little bit of a resonance there, right? I built the sales machine software to empower sales people and companies, literally all for the salesperson, with rewards, recognition, competition, compensation, levels of development so they know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And to solve my own problem, there was a gap in my training and my products and services early on, and I needed to close that gap. We were bleeding. We were losing people, and I went everywhere. And, you know, I bought books, and I went to tech companies, and I'm like, you know, look, I need this. I went to, you know, Salesforce. I went to HubSpot, Zoho, and they're like, we don't do that. I'm like, the CRMs are bullshit. They're just address books. They're digital. They don't help the salesperson, right? What would be your best advice to a sales manager out there about how to recruit, train, and retain a new generation of salespeople?
I'm going to give advice from the time you engage with them. I wouldn't know how to go find them. I don't do that. I you know, whatever. But once you get them and you engage them, the first thing I would say is I'd come up with a process that allows you to evaluate their drive, a process that allows you to evaluate their critical thinking skills, and a process that allows you to evaluate their curiosity, right? So I would come up with a way, those are the three most important skills to me. Like, I'm sure everybody else has their own little qualification criteria. What do you know about my industry and how long you've been selling and all that shit? And so if you want to ask them, you know, behavioral-based questions or situational-based questions. And, well, you know, a buyer does this. What do you do? Okay, fine, do that. But outside of that, what I care more about is the person. How smart is that person? How well can that person process information? How well are they solving problems? And that comes back to their curiosity. It comes back to their critical thinking skills. And it comes back to their acumen. And then finally, their drive and their self-awareness. I think one of the biggest problems we don't measure for is self-awareness, right? And people who really understand where they're good, where they're on, are honest with themselves when they screw up and don't screw up, are honest with their actual assessment of their skill sets. I did a video just the other day on LinkedIn. I think the average person, or more than the average person, I think most people have a hyperinflated sense of self. An absolutely hyperinflated sense of self. They think they are way better in the things they do than they really are. There's a massive disconnect between their actual capabilities and how good they think they are. So anything I do when it comes to hiring somebody is I want to cut through that bullshit. I want to find out how good you really are, and I'm going to put your ass to the test, right? And if you can't get through that test, then I'm not hiring you. Then the second thing that I would look for, from a retention perspective, that is less about the person. That's more about you. What type of environment have you built?
Come on.
That makes it so someone wants to stay with you? What type of culture have you created? What type of support do you have, right? What type of environment are these people coming into and experiencing? How successful do you make it? Like, what do you do to make them successful? Like, all of that is, you own that. If people are leaving on a regular basis, or you have high attrition, that's because of you. That's not the people. That's you. You're doing something wrong. You need to look in the mirror.
You know, I've been doing this for 30 years, building and scaling multi-million dollar sales teams. And I have four pillars for retaining people. Number one is the environment, right? Is it a challenging environment? Is it a supportive environment? You know, number two is relationships. What kind of relationships are there on the teams, right? Within the teams. And between the company and the culture and the people, what relationship guidelines are there? Number three is growth. People grow or die. So if there's not levels of development, then people are going to hit a wall and sales just become transactional and they're going to go somewhere else for another paycheck. And beyond that is purposeful. Can they achieve their purpose, or is your company providing a purpose greater than themselves? Now you got them. And you know what? I've had them for life. 25 years I've had people. 30 years I've had people still with me.
Yep.
You nailed it, dude. And most people don't have a fucking clue about what it really takes to recruit, train, and retain and build a multi-million dollar sales force and keep them.
Yep.
Tell me about the most memorable sale you've ever been a part of that, you know, you were just like, man, that was incredible.
Wow. This is sad. I'm struggling here. I wasn't an individual contributor very long. So I came on the scene as an individual contributor and crushed it in everything I touched. So I got promoted into management within 18 months. You know, now, once I started my business, I guess you could argue for the first 7 years, it was just me as from a consulting perspective. So I was an individual contributor for myself. So, and I'm not one to really, you know, what's that puts a notch in my belt or on my bed, you know what I'm saying, of all these things. So it's really tough. Let me stretch here. I guess one of the most memorable that I won was my very first sales job. I sold chamber memberships. This is in 1996. And the average chamber membership cost, $300. No, $150. Then it went to $500. And then it went to $1,100. So bronze, silver, gold. And then they had a $2,500 one, a $5,000 one, and a $10,000 one. And I think like only two $10,000 ones had ever been sold. And I remember when I got in that job, I was like, I'm selling one of those. I'm selling one of those, right? I mean, this is 96. I never sold a day of my life. I was only 26 years old. This was 30 years ago almost. And so I sold one of those, and I did it. I did it in my first year. People were like, holy shit. So I did it. I remember the guy's name, Dave Shunk. I still remember him. And he worked for this, what was the name of the company? I forget the name of the company. It was a big organization in town, and they wanted to get on a particular committee to help influence economic development for the city of Denver, and the pay to play to be on that committee was 10 grand. So I sold that sucker. So I remember it.
Yeah. I always say confidence comes from competence, and competence comes from practicing. Right. And it's not just, I agree with you. It's not about just notches in the belt, but every one of those reinforces your psyche, that especially when you're doing sales for people, not to them.
Yes.
Every time I make a sale, I'm helping somebody, and I love to help people.
Yes. Good for you.
That gives me the confidence to know to sell or not to sell, because I'm happy to walk away from a sale if it's not in service. I'm done, and I'll point you in a different direction, right? So as a consultant, and like you've been doing it for years. I mean, this book was copyrighted. It says 2018, but you did the work way before that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Before that. So tell me about the biggest difference you've made with the company, because as a consultant, you're basically, and I'm not going to label you, but as a consultant, it's a big arena, but ultimately, you're going in and you're looking at their sales people, their sales process. You're looking at what products and services that they have that have a value proposition. Is their value proposition worth more than the customer's handing over the money for? Right. And I call that fabulous. What are the features in your products? Because if you're dealing with tech guys, they're going to care about that. The advantages. That's the middle management or the CEOs. They want to know what is the advantage of your product over others. And then finally, the benefits, especially the CEO or the founder cares about the benefits because they want to know what's the return on the investment. An average CEO is fired every 4 years. So what is the biggest difference that you've ever made when you went into a company, looked at their sales process? And what's the biggest difference you made, and what was the result?
So there were two that jump out for different reasons. So the first one was one of my very first clients. They were a software, like a CRM / ticketing software for, what do you call those things? For performing arts centers. So performing arts centers, 99% are nonprofit. So what would happen is they were nonprofits and they had to raise money. Right. So they have donors, right, that have donors that they want to raise money from on a regular basis. So they had a CRM to manage all those people. But you could also sell tickets through this thing. But then it allowed the combination of the two. So that if you sold the ticket to you, you'd go into my CRM and now I could market you in the future. So I would know how many times you've come. I would know how many tickets you bought, all this type of shit, right? So, and then it also helped them manage capital fundraising. So if they wanted to, you know, do something new, they wanted to redo the theater or need to raise money, they could use, again, they have all their donors. They had different fields for the donors, blah, blah, blah. So anyways, the biggest thing I did for them, besides helping them double in revenue, was we had their sales operations and sales, their sales operations engine so finely tuned that when someone came to buy them, the CEO who I work with very closely, he literally called me up and he said, I owe you, this deal would not have gone through without you. I'm like, I didn't participate in the deal. He goes, you don't understand. Our sales was so buttoned down that every time they asked us a question about where is sales, what's the pipeline, what's this, what's that, how's this, how's that, I had an answer within 10 minutes. And so they had all the confidence in the world in our sales engine because of all the work we had done, and that sale went through. Now, the beauty in that sale, which is you can't plan. Now, watch this. There's a winner and a loser in everything, sometimes not conscious. They sold. He made great money. Kept a small piece, but made great money. But ready for this? They sold in, I believe, August or September of 2019. I paused for effect. September or October of 2019. Who was their customer? I just told you. Who was their customer?
Performing arts centers, right?
Yes, yes. Performing, and they were in New York City. Yep, keep going. So they sold for a eight digits in September of 2019. What happened 6 months later?
No idea.
COVID, dog. COVID. 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 What do you think happened to the performance arts industry?
Disappeared.
Poof. Overnight. Nobody was going out. No performing arts. Poof. They sold 6 months before their company would have went under, and he would have lost everything. He would have lost everything, right? He didn't have the cash to maintain through that whole thing. So that's one massive influence I had, and I'll never forget that. When he thanks me to this day, he's like, "Keenan, you saved our lives." The other one, I'll be shorter about it, was a $27 million facilities management. Well, it's we'll just go with facilities management company. What they did is they created they did the, oh my god, the world coming in a minute. They wanted to get to 45 million by 2020. Was 2020 or 2017? Doesn't matter. By X period of time, 3 years. It's 2017 or something like that. And if they could, they could sell. So when I started work with them, they wanted to sell, and the average valuation was 3 to 5X if you're under 40 million. If you're over 40 million, it jumps to about 7 to 10X. So we had this whole plan. It was 2020. We had this whole plan. 48 million by 2020. There it goes. We had this thing, 48 in 2020. I was able to help them get that. They just missed 48, but they got over 40, and they sold for 11 figures.
All right. You're hired. Let's do it together.
Yeah,
that's fantastic, man. And so what is the biggest challenge when you go into these companies that you see with sales management?
By the way, I messed up. I got to be clear. The first company I sold for eight, I didn't sell. There was an eight-figure sale. The second company I sold was for a nine-figure sale. I dupped them. So it wasn't billions. It was in the hundreds of millions, and the other one was in tens of millions. So anyways, I want to make sure I'm clear.
You're forgiven. I'll do the $100 million deal.
The question was, what's the most difficult thing when I go in?
Yeah, what's the most difficult challenge you see? Because when people, you know, seek you out.
Getting people to change. That's the hardest part.
Right.
And in fact, not only is it the hardest part, it's the hardest part about selling too. Even when they hire us, I find myself battling somebody or some section or some group. There's always that person or people that don't want to change, and they think they're right, and they think they're doing it correctly, and you got to explain it to them, and you got to prove it to them. Like, why are you making me work so hard? If you don't fucking want to change, why are you paying me? I mean, if you could do it yourself, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. So shut the fuck up and listen to me. Now, ask me questions, want clarity, want to understand. I got you all day. I'm the same way. If you come in and tell me to do something, I'm going to do it. But sometimes, like, well, help me understand. I want to know the underpinnings. Like, when I work with my trainers, sometimes they do this. I'm like, dog, you need to explain to me why this is going to help me reach my goal. Like, I don't get it. And he walks, oh, okay, I'll do it twice now. You know what I'm saying? But but when you fight me on it, you say you don't want to do it, or you're like, I'm not sure this is, no. So really, that has been always the hardest part. The people that don't want to change or think they know better. I'm like, then why am I here?
What have you seen between marketing and sales? Because there's a lot of pointing fingers, right? With my own experiences running a company, and I've ran a company for 30 years, becomes a blame game. Marketing says, we got you all these leads. Sales says, your leads suck. And then marketing says, you cannot sell. Have you experienced that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, 100%. And here's the irony. Have you ever heard the phrase, the cobbler's children have no shoes?
No.
So basically the premise of that is the cobbler's so busy making and fixing everybody else's shoes, he's neglecting his own children, right? His own children's shoes, right? So here, I joke sometimes, we have the same thing going here at a sales growth company. We're spending so much time working on everybody else's businesses and training everybody else and consulting for everybody else, we lose track of our own shit, right? So we literally just had a meeting the other day, and I think it's tomorrow. We have another one tomorrow to solve it, because we were starting to have that whole internal fight between marketing and sales ourselves. And so what I noticed is the reason we have this, and I see my other customers have it, is there's not a real clear definition of the overlap. They're two separate entities. And what we realize, and what I've always tried to do, is create concentric circles. So that, yes, marketing has its function and sales has its function, but there has to be an overlap. And I believe that overlap sits between the lead and the opportunity, right? So even though the salesperson has to take the opportunity forward, marketing has to be responsible for getting it into the lead. And then even though it's marketing's job to create the lead, it's sales' job to nurture the lead and turn it into an opportunity. So when you think about the whole thing, we create this concentric circle, and one side is the lead to the opportunity, the other side is the opportunity towards the lead, and both sides have to take equal accountability for that little middle section. So if you're giving us a bunch of leads and they're not turning into opportunities, why, marketing? Tell me why these aren't turning into opportunities outside of the fact the salesperson sucks. But the other side is, if you're not turning to opportunities, sales, then tell me why that lead isn't there, and let's break that down and do that piece. And I think if you can solve that piece, then you're getting there. Then you're getting there.
Absolutely. You know, and we talked earlier about critical thinking and being hugely curious, right? So
yes,
I subscribe 100% in. Like, I'll ask my salespeople, so what do you know about the company? What do you know about the market share of that industry? What do you know about how many people work at that company? What do you, you know, what have you checked out and researched all about that prospect? In your experience, and not just an opinion, how much time do you think salespeople should actually be, and you talk about it in the book, prospecting, not just marketers, but salespeople?
I think that depends on your role. So if you have SDRs and you're getting a full complement of appointments set, and you're making quota, exceeding quota, then maybe not so much. If you're a full service AE and you got to do it all yourself, then probably 70-80% of the time. So I think that the amount you prospect to me has less to do with a general horizontal question, and more to do vertically. Where are you in your job? What does your current pipeline look like? What are the expectations? Where are you on quota? I mean, look, obviously pipeline is everything. Pipeline is the best leading indicator you can have of a successful salesperson. You have a shitty pipeline, I can tell you, you're in trouble. Like, that's the best leading indicator. But that's going outside of that. How you build that pipeline and how much time you build that pipeline is really dependent on how big is the pipeline itself. And what is your role? Do you have SDRs? Do you not, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm really not sure how to answer that question, but I'll answer it like this. The best people in all of their fields, sales, professional basketball, tennis, engineers, doctors, lawyers, I don't give a shit. The best ones have a clear understanding of how they're measured in the output. So in sales, that's your making quota, what it takes to get there. And they have more drive and problem-solving skills than anybody else. And they apply those to make sure they get to their goal.
In saying that, what's your approach to actually setting goals?
That's a great question, my man. I would have to say that my approach to setting goals is looking at what I believe can be done. So what I think I can do. And then some gut that says, great, how much more of that can I achieve, do I think I can achieve? So if I'm like, oh, hey, we did $10 million last year. We have a run rate of $11 million this year. Fuck it. I think we do 14. That's kind of, look, I get it. It doesn't fit well with a lot of people. That's kind of how I do it. And then I build a plan. I have something called the GSIT, Goals, Strategies, Initiative, Tactics. So then I build a plan that highlights the initiatives and the tactics and the strategies I'm going to leverage to get there. And as long as I believe in those strategies, and as long as I can execute properly against those strategies, I normally make it. And then sometimes I don't, and I'm like, oop, that was a mistake. But my goals are always way bigger than what usually could be done.
Do you currently have a group of salespeople that are actually out there selling your consulting?
Yes.
What kind of tools do you use to manage, track, and measure, align, and reward them? And that's why I built the sales machine. I literally wanted a system. I wanted a total system. And I signed up for a couple CRMs and they didn't work. They're just address books. Yeah, they have a pipeline, but they don't really drive that salesperson to really know what to do, when to do it, how to do it. And I wanted to set and forget. So here's manage, track, measure, align, and reward all of their activity so that they do it and I don't have to supervise it. And then when I just want to look at the system, I have everything right at a glance. So how do you do it?
So we bought an application 18 months ago, maybe almost 2 years ago, called Noted Analytics. And so what Noted Analytics does is it sits on top of Salesforce and it does three things. The first one it does is it makes it 10 times easier to get information into Salesforce. So we have a system where you can just take notes like it's a blank, what do you call that thing? Evernote or a blank Google Docs page. It looks like that, the UI, and you just type away. Take your notes while you're talking to your customer on-prem or at home. You can on-prem and you have your little fucking, you know, what do you call that thing? iPad or setting your computer on Zoom. You take your notes. When you're done taking your notes, you tag every note and it puts it into the appropriate field. Now, this requires a methodology. So you can be Bant, it can be GapSign, it can be Spin, Spice, I don't give a fuck. But we build it to match your methodology, right?
Yep.
So make it easier to get in. Once it gets into the appropriate fields that aligns with your methodology, we have these, it sends a notification to management. It has these feedback fields associated with every field that is part of your methodology. So management can read what you wrote or read your notes in a particular field. So we're using gap selling. One of the fields is the current state, physical and literal problem impact. So three fields. You can look at physical and literal and the manager can, she can say, hey, I don't think there's enough here. How many employees do they have? What are they physical and literal facts? What current software do they have in place? What countries they work in? How does their product work? Like, you're missing all this. Go get it. Then, and they click a button, not met, partially met, mostly met, fully met. Then they can go to the next piece line and they can fill this whole thing out. And the minute they press a button, it goes back to the salesperson and all the feedback that that manager provided for the opportunity is provided so they can go improve the quality of the opportunity based on what was missing and lacking. But the other thing it does is it spits out a score. So every time that back and forth happens, it improves the score of the opportunity. Then the next stage of what this does is it takes that score and it starts tracking win rates against the three scores. We have green, yellow, or red. So as a deal is won or lost in either one of those stages, it calculates how long did it take to close? What was the average sales price? What was the win rate? I think those are the three. And then gives you management that those reports against those colors. And what we found, and management can start recognizing, is if it gets to green, you have a 3x chance of closing that deal. If it gets to yellow, you only have a 2x. And if you get to red, it only closes single digits. So what we're seeing is if it's in red, you only have about an 8% win rate. If it gets to yellow, it starts getting about 18 to 19%. And if it's in green, it's across all of our users, it starts pushing about 65 or 70%. No one else has this. So now if you know that getting it to green gets you a 60% close rate, it incents managers to keep reviewing. See what I'm doing here? Keep reviewing all these deals and get these fucking deals to green because it's going to increase your close rate. So that's how we do it here.
In a screenshot, a sales manager knows exactly what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And we've incorporated coaching in the sales machine so that we can manage, track, and measure those individuals' win rates.
Yep.
And then give them feedback and a course on immediately what they need to learn to get better. I love it.
That's good. Good for you. I like that.
What do you see as far as, you know, emerging technologies to help the salesperson? Because for me, you know, I've had a lot of AI guys on this podcast and they're experts, and I love AI as, you know, it's like my little co-pilot. I just tell it what to do and go do it. How do you see emerging technologies affecting sales, and how do you think salespeople and or companies should use AI for their sales?
I've never been a good prognosticator of technology, what's coming, what's not coming. It's not uncommon for me to be an early adopter. So when something comes out and I'm like, oh, that's going to be good. No, I didn't see that coming. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I don't see things coming, but when they're right in front of me, I'm like, oh, so I jump on and take advantage of it early. So like I started blogging in 2009, super early. That's how I built this entire company. I was blogging for anybody else. I saw the value in building an audience, right? I got on LinkedIn really, I saw the value in LinkedIn about 5 years ago, not just as an online resume, but for, again, creating brand, creating organic reach. So, you know, I was able to get a lot of attention for the book and for people by building videos and stuff super early in LinkedIn. Now everybody's doing it. It's hard. So I missed the TikTok one. So I didn't see that one when I started. I was like, I don't know. So the long and short answer is I can't tell you what's coming. Once it gets here and it's early, I can tell you if I think it's going to be successful or not. And AI one is, I don't like AI right now. Don't like it at all, right? I think there are some good uses for it. One of them is managing data in a very finite data set environment to find trends. So we're going to look to add AI to Noted Analytics. So I told you right now with this whole reporting structure, I like the idea of using AI to go through that and say, hey, there's a trend we're seeing. Hey, this is something we're recognizing. Here, for example, hey, even though green closes at 60%, we found that when the gap field is only at partially met, that actually drops to 50%. And when it's fully met, it drives to 80%. Thus, the average is 60, roughly. So if you can fix that piece, you could get that green from 60 to 80 if you do that piece. I like AI for that.
Yeah.
Right? I like AI for crunching numbers and finding trends. I can't stand it for creating content. I can't stand it for human interaction. It's using dead data to try to talk. Remember I talked about this whole conversation about critical thinking? AI does not critical think, everybody. Listen the fuck up. AI does not critically think. AI takes data and creates data structures to feed back what you already know, except in terms of trends. And those trends have to be based primarily on a fixed data set somewhere. You can't turn AI loose, like, oh, I'll tell you what's going on, and it's going to go find the data itself. No, you got to tell it what the fuck to look for. So if I have to tell you what to look for, then you're not doing me any favors. So now, I don't like it to replace sales. Now, I think someday it will get there. I think someday it will get there. And when it does, that's a different story.
The greatest salespeople in the world, and Chet Holmes used to talk about this, most CEOs cannot think strategically and tactically, meaning they can think strategically, but then they can't implement tactically. Or they They don't think strategically, but they can tactically do things.
Yep, that's a great observation.
There's a disconnect, people being able to think strategically and then implement. I mean, the internet is full of millions of people that have read 1,000 books. Oh, congratulations. What'd you implement? What did you implement? Like, I'll read something, and, you know, even from this conversation, I'll go back and say, you know, what was that nugget in this conversation that Keenan gave us that people can implement into their business right now and start kicking major ass? What you're given is gold. And, you know, that's what I want for companies out there to be able to hear what you're saying and take what you're saying and implement it. Because it's one thing to fucking read a book or watch a video. It's a completely different thing to implement, right? And you gave that 4-part structure in implementing.
Goals, strategies, initiative, tactics.
A key thing I want to know from you is, what is the greatest thing you ever learned about sales?
That's about helping. Like, the minute you understand it's about helping, it changes everything. Now, here's the other piece, though. Once you understand it's about helping, then you realize you can't help if you don't understand. So I'll let that sit in with people. Sales is about helping, but you cannot help if you don't understand. And what I say a lot, right? What I say a lot to people is, in a lot of the trainings or speaking engagements I do, I go, how many people here are that person in your friend group that if someone is having trouble with the relationship or someone wants advice or someone wants help with something from an intellectual perspective, call you? And then about like 4 or 5 hands go up, right? So I'm like, so you're that person when all your friends are like, should I break up with my boyfriend or girlfriend, or should I take this job, or should I invest in this? They call you, right? I'm like, yeah. And I said, I'm that person too. So many friends call me, right? And I said, so when somebody calls you for advice, says, what do you think I should do? What's the very first thing that comes out of your mouth?
Right.
How many of you are the person your friends go to for advice? You're the go-to person who wants advice. Should I stay with my boyfriend or girlfriend? Should I invest? Should I buy a new car? Should I quit my job? Whatever. And I said, so if you're that person, when that friend comes to you and asks you for a piece of advice, they say, should I keep this job? I can't stand it. What should I do? And they ask you, what's the first thing that comes out of your mouth? And most of them say, because it's what I say, I don't know. Tell me what's going on. Because if you're truly there to help and you ask me, hey, Keenan, should I invest in this or should I quit my job? I don't know, because I don't understand what's going on right now. So I am not going to give you any advice until I understand. Well, that's what selling is. If you look at your job as giving advice, and your advice is you should buy my book, or you should buy my product, you should buy my car, whatever. If the advice is buy my thing, then you had better understand what's going on so that when you give that advice, it is perceived as sound and beneficial. And if it is not or cannot be, you don't make it, and you say to them, hey, look, I'd love to help you out, but I'm not your guy. I can't help.
Brilliant. So how do people work with you? How do people contact you so that you can take their business to 100 million?
You can just go to salesgrowthcompany.com, or you can hit me up on LinkedIn, just Keenan Dot on LinkedIn. And then if you just put Gap Selling or ASG, a sales growth company, into Google, you can't miss me or us.
This has been a great time.
Thank you, dog.
That's a wrap, folks. Thanks for joining me today. And if you got value from this episode, do me a favor. Like, subscribe, and refer a friend. And if you want even more value, go to thesalesmachine.com, click on resources, and there's tons of resources there to increase profits and drive performance in your business. Right on, right on. Come on.